Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I dive deep into the fascinating world of cultural intelligence with Dr. Anastasia Gabriel, and we talk about the inspiration that actually led her to write her book. In the conversation, we understand the nuances of cultural intelligence and its significance in marketing. We also talked about how important it is to embrace adaptability and empathy to be able to connect with diverse audiences and, most importantly, in a very, very authentic way. Then the conversation led to how to leverage cultural insights to craft compelling narratives and resonate with consumers on a deeper level, and how to continuously evolve strategies to remain culturally relevant in this very, very rapidly changing global landscape. Don't go anywhere. I promise it's going to be a very meaningful conversation. Melting Pot, a global podcast series hosted by Pyle, connects guests who have inspiring stories and reaches out to a multicultural audience over 52 countries. Guests are diverse, such as celebrities, entrepreneurs, travelers, and many more who've had a turning point in their lives and moved over to a holistic lifestyle. Follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, social media. Hi, everyone. Today for me this morning and for Anastasia, it's late, and I'm really appreciative of the fact that she stayed awake for this interview. I am happy to be in conversation with Anastasia Gabriel, who is a PhD. She is a cultural theorist. She's a writer, a social critic, a strategist who specializes in inclusivity within marketing, media, and tech. And she has recently published a book, which is called Cultural Intelligence for Marketeers. Thank you so much for joining me today, Anastasia.
Thank you for having me. It's a huge pleasure.
So Anastasia, let's start by you telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how did you actually get into marketing and think of the concept of marketing aligned with cultural intelligence?
Funny enough, if you had told me that I would be in marketing, in brand strategy, even 5 years ago, I'd probably laugh very loudly and think it was the most ridiculous idea ever, because I spent most of my career so far in academia, in specifically cultural studies, training to become a professor, as well as very actively involved in a lot of grassroots social justice movements. So that's my background and has been my passion, my calling, things that I've always been drawn to very naturally and organically ever since I was probably 13, 14 years old. And the issues of othering, of empowerment or disempowerment, of belonging and disbelonging have always fascinated me ever since I was a child. Essentially, I grew up in Eastern Europe. And I continued with my education, pursuing my doctorate in cultural studies, specifically focusing on issues of race, gender, sexuality in the United States in particular, which is where I have been based for the last 13 years. And at some point at the end of my doctoral training, I just remember this moment of sitting at my desk, and I was on a full-funded fellowship. I didn't have to teach. I didn't have to act as a research assistant to any of the faculty. And it was a kind of academic's dream. You get to sit in your office and your time is yours and you get to research. And I had this moment of realization that I really wanted to be immersed in culture as it was happening and use my knowledge of cultural history and cultural traditions as a way to be engaged with what's happening in the now. So that's when I had my realization that I wanted to be engaged in trends, in changing consumer behaviors, in the evolution of culture as it's transpired, rather than just look back. So I started searching, and eventually, quite organically, I stumbled upon cultural strategy within marketing and cultural research, and that is what I have been doing for the last several years.
Okay, so can you share some examples of cultural intelligence and how it has actually successfully influenced marketing campaigns or strategies?
Absolutely. I started working in marketing at the end of 2019. And as we all know, in 2020, there were a lot of racial uprisings and protests surrounding racial injustice in the United States. And so that's when really brands started paying attention as consumers started demanding greater inclusivity from beauty brands and the kind of makeup that was available to women with darker skin tones, different hair textures, etc., as well as just more broadly in attention to sustainability and things like that. So I ended up working with some of the leading brands like Nike, Ulta Beauty, Hinge, on everything from the future of sport, how sport is evolving, for example, and really applying the tools of cultural analysis, which is what I really do, applying the concepts and frameworks from cultural studies to understand what's really happening in culture, where culture is going, to really speak to younger generations. For example, I worked on some of the projects around the future of sport and how younger people might start seeing not only football and soccer as their version of athleticism or physical activity, but also movement and dance, thinking really more holistically about our ideas of what it means to be an athlete are evolving. So that's one example from some of my past work. And another example that I like to mention is my work with one of the largest beauty retailers here in the United States that really focused a lot of their research in the years that I've been involved with them on understanding how women from historically overlooked backgrounds understand beauty, whether that is related, as I mentioned before, to a variety of hair textures, whether that was researching the experiences of more mature women who are historically not represented in beauty as an industry, etc. So those are some of the examples of cultural intelligence that I think are worth paying attention to. And what unites them, I think, is just asking the questions of what have we been missing? What have we been overlooking? What lived experiences, perspectives have been pushed to the sidelines historically? And how can we push them back into the center and make them equally as important as the perspectives and experiences that we have historically privileged and centered?
Okay, yeah, because so do you think that the brands are actually, the bigger brands are now becoming more and more sensitive to the nuances of the different cultures and they're trying to be more inclusive? Is that a general perception that you have now or you've been noticing in the recent past that there is a better awareness now?
There's definitely a better awareness. I think there is plenty of data that we have that suggests that the majority of consumers, and certainly younger generation, now expect brands to be more inclusive and to be more sensitive to different cultural communities, their experiences, and to actively include them in not only their marketing campaigns, but also product design, right? Speaking again of beauty, for example, as an instance of the shade ranges that are available, et cetera. And I think there's certainly awareness, at the very least, because of the pressure that professionals in marketing advertising are feeling of these expectations. I should say that as with any work of social change, it takes time and there are challenges along the way. And so I think we are now seeing some of the pushback against diversity, equity, and inclusion more broadly in some of the discourse, particularly in the United States right now, where there's also pushback on more purposeful and purpose-driven work within marketing. And as with any struggle for social change, for social transformation, there was always going to be this push and pull where we have to balance fulfilling commercial objectives, where as marketers, we're tasked with being responsible for running a business, for being custodians of the brands and helping them thrive. But then there's also this current of expectations around sustainability and social justice and things like that. I guess to answer your question more succinctly, I think there is awareness. There's also a little bit of pushback. And I think we're in this moment of push and pull.
Okay. Yeah, but at least there is, questions are being asked. And as you mentioned, that the younger generation is now being far more vocal about how they feel and the importance of inclusivity, which I think at least the conversations have started and the brands are getting aware, and therefore the messaging through the advertising is gradually, it's a very slow process, clearly, but at least there is some kind of a change, which I think is, so it's obviously headed in the right direction. I wanted to ask you about technology and what kind of a role does, you know, data analytics and technology play in the intersection of cultural intelligence with modern marketing practices?
Mm-hmm. The way that I conceive of cultural intelligence in my book and my work more broadly, I think of it and I offer a framework of thinking about innovation, strategy, and engagement and culture through the lens of equity, inclusivity, impact, and accountability. And so when it comes to technology, now we are seeing very obviously the emergence of AI technologies, natural language processing, and so on. And from the perspective of cultural intelligence, which really asks us to think more critically about the work that we are doing and how it's impacting culture and society, there's a question of bias that is very much related to technology. And something that I feel quite passionate about is thinking of technology as an extension of society, as a product of the knowledge and awareness that we have as human beings that build various technologies. So from a perspective of cultural intelligence, I'm very interested in surfacing questions of racial and gender bias, especially now when we see a lot of these new technologies that have that bias baked in them. And so that begs a question when it comes to data analytics or research and insights, which is really my bread and butter, whether when we are using these tools, we can actually arrive at learnings and findings that are actually representative of the audiences that we want to reach, or whether we need to be more aware and think more critically about how we use technologies to ensure that bias is not present. So that's something that I feel is quite urgent now as the technology is being popularized, evolving and developing. And cultural intelligence kind of asks us to have that culture of questioning and awareness of the ways in which technology can be tainted by our own blind spots.
So are there conversations around it? Are these the new technology which is coming in terms of AI and things, mm-hmm. are they trying to, do you see a conscious effort in them trying to incorporate this into whatever they are doing? Or you still think that they have a long way to go?
I don't quite sit as closely to teams that work on those technologies, so I can only speak from my personal observations of the discourse and the kind of conversations that are happening. I do think that there is a push.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
To pay attention, and there has been push for a while, even from my time in academia, where perhaps not necessarily related to the topic of AI specifically, but there's work that really incorporates understanding of race and gender into kind of critical analysis of technology and technological evolution. So I certainly know that there is a conversation happening in the academy and perhaps more on the margins, which is why I am a big proponent of looking towards non-traditional knowledge bodies in business, as we are in marketing, and looking towards academia, looking towards activist circles, people who concern themselves with the question of ethics, as a way of centering those questions in our own work. Because as a lot of us know, working in a commercial setting, those questions have not been at the forefront. And I see them emerging. From my perspective, I would love them to be even more acknowledged, even more centered, even more prioritized. And I can only hope that sort of continues. And as more purpose-driven work gets normalized in the business world, hopefully we'll see more of that conversation happen.
Okay, so let's talk about your book.
Oh, wonderful. We'd love to.
What was the push for you to want to write this book?
To the point that I just made, I've always felt that there is a value to academic scholarship, to intellectual traditions that I feel have transformed me. I went to university here in the United States and had just the most transformational experience as a young person, where I just felt my university education just opened up my eyes and gave me ways of thinking about what was happening around me in the way that I had never imagined before. And that's what initially motivated me to become a professor, because I wanted to give the same experience to other young people. As I transitioned outside of the academy, I realized that after 2020 in particular, marketing profession started to encounter issues of what we call performative marketing. Brands that wanted to do the right thing, but didn't quite have the tools. So under the pressure of consumer expectations, just did whatever. And obviously that is usually picked up by audiences, particularly younger consumers. And so a couple of years back, we were in a conversation of what does it mean to do genuinely inclusive work? How can we avoid appropriation, performative marketing, and so on? And so I found myself sitting and thinking, there are so many tools that we have within the traditions that I was trained, which is cultural studies, that actually help answer those questions. And as I was talking to marketers, specifically younger marketers that are just starting their careers, there was this consensus that every single conversation that I had, young marketers were saying, I want to do more meaningful work. Can you put a reading list for me? What should I read? What should I know about? What should I watch? And general curiosity. And so the book really arises out of that, to share some of the concepts and framework that I find very helpful in my work, and to translate them and make them more accessible to non-academic audiences who might not have the opportunity to go back to school and get a whole degree, but could really benefit from some of those tools in their day-to-day life.
So it gives them the opportunity. Yeah, you're absolutely right about critical thinking. And from what you're saying, the education that you've had still in the US allowed you to be able to poke and try and explore, and therefore be able to think out of the box. and which my understanding is what you're hoping that your book will be able to. That's the kind of messaging through your book for young marketers who are just starting out and who, like you mentioned, don't have an opportunity to have the kind of education that you've had. So at least, and they're curious, because that is this generation. There's absolutely no doubt about that. So you're hoping that your book is able to, in some way, transform some of the thinking, right?
Yes, and I hope it's also a friendly provocation for veteran marketers that I personally look up to and respect in regards to the knowledge pertaining to the commercial world, business, how to do effective marketing. But traditionally, we have thought of business world as being separate from work of social impact, social transformation and change. And it's one way of perhaps providing a new way of thinking about marketing for more seasoned practitioners to say, we can actually apply the very important business knowledge and we can still do good in the world. And how do we think about business on new terms where business hopefully can drive positive change, not only for commercial entities, but also for people and the planet?
So looking ahead, what do you think are the trends that you, in your opinion, or what will be the relationship between brands and culture and how the marketeers are going to adapt to it, in your opinion?
From where I sit, I would say that co-creation and engagement of community is something that I think more culturally intelligent brands will take up in the nearest future. And the reason I say that is because we are in this moment, not only in marketing, but I think in the world of business more broadly, where consumers are not only expecting brand-driven businesses to be engaged in culture, but they're also at the same time very skeptical of brands who do speak on social issues. So there is a tension there, and it's amplified by the kind of polarization that we are seeing in this moment. And if I'm getting this correctly, one of the reports that I've recently read from agency Hawass was saying that something around 70-71% of consumers expect brands to be transparent about their social commitments, but only 33% of people actually think that brands are transparent and that they are actually committed to things that they say they're committed to. And so what we're seeing now from several brands is them bringing consumers into the process of not only marketing campaign creation, but also product designs. A retailer, Claire's, is currently piloting a program where they're bringing Generation Alpha, the creatives, artists who are children and teenagers, into their process and really seeing them as experts of their own experience and incorporating those perspectives into their work rather than just speaking at audiences. And I think we also see that with some of the recent campaigns from some of the largest brands where they're really leaning into social impact. So not just marketing to communities, but also contributing something to them, usually in form of resources or finances, and really making that impact. So all that is to say that the trend I think that we are seeing from brands that are getting it right is a kind of moving away from just marketing at audiences or going into communities and extracting ideas to giving back and having a bit more of a reciprocal relationship with people that brands market to and are in conversation with.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that's quite interesting, that the brands are not, they're trying to be, they're trying to bring in the people rather than trying to say, okay, they're not talking at them, but they're trying to bring them into their ideas. And so they're trying to work with them rather than,
I'm happy to mention some examples to make it a little bit more tangible. I think some of the recent things that I'm excited about are a brand like Hinge, which is a dating app that is not just marketing their app to people, young people who are interested in dating, but they have actually created a $1 million fund to tackle the epidemic of loneliness among young people. So data suggests that young people feel lonely. They don't necessarily have a lot of third spaces to interact with, to go out and engage. And so in certain communities, the brand is not just providing avenues for dating, but actually creating programs involve young people, to bringing them out of their homes in a settings where they can socialize. So that's one example, I think, where brands are giving back and paying attention to what's happening with their audiences that is not necessarily related. And then another example that I am quite excited about is Vaseline, which is a brand that we all know. And they have recently started a campaign where they're going around the United States and repairing old murals, artwork that is in neighborhoods that have deteriorated. And what they're doing is raising awareness about skin issues or dermatological issues pertaining specifically to people of color who in dermatology have not necessarily been centered and have not received traditionally medicine adequate support, particularly in the United States, where, you know, someone who looks like me would probably be featured in a textbook with skin issues pertaining to my skin tone. And not only are they repairing those murals, but they are channeling money into health clinics that are able to provide resources. And then, speaking to co-creation, involving community where anyone in the United States could apply to have a mural in their community repaired. And the brand pledges not to just come in and repair that artwork in the neighborhood, but also bring more financial resources to the health clinics in those areas. So we can see that creative co-creation, but also inclination of brands to make involved, impact or show that they're making impact in the community.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Yeah. And we hope that there are more and more brands who are starting to bring about this change. Thank you so much, Anastasia. When's your book actually getting launched? Sometime in March is my understanding. And
yes, very soon.
Thank you for sharing a copy of the book with me, because it was very interesting to read and understand what you have been talking about anyway. So I had a bit of an understanding, which helps. So
yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. The book comes out on Tuesday, March 26th. So it has been already made available in the UK and the rest of the world earlier this month on March 3rd. So your international viewers and listeners can already get their hands on the book. And in North America, it's coming in a little less than 2 weeks. And would love to hear any feedback and any thoughts or provocations from anyone who might get their hands on a copy sometime soon.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's going to be a feedback. Thank you so much again, Anastasia. I'm going to leave you now to have a good night's rest, and I will speak to you again soon.
Great. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
You take care. Bye for now. Bye. Bye.
For more weekly conversations, do listen to Melting Pot on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on YouTube and on Instagram at Podcast Melting Pot. So until the next episode, this is Payal signing off.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.